am Turner, my brand coach. I also say a friend.
Yeah.
Someone that I learn from, someone that is always pushing me to expand my thinking. And so I'm grateful for that. But how would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you for saying that. The feelings are mutual. I am a strategist, an entrepreneur, a advisor, angel investor, board member, and personal brand aligner, aka brand coach for high impact individuals. My background is in public relations, media, and marketing strategy. I started my own public relations firm in 2006 when I was 23. And my naivete was one of the best things. We were working with brands in the like fashion, beauty, wellness space. And because I wanted to combine what I was good at and also what I enjoyed and had fun doing and talking about. And I realized really quickly that so much of our power as women in society, besides how we have sex and make babies, is how we shop. And that so was like wrapped into like how we make the decisions that we make, all of these things. And I'm really lucky to have parents who are PhDs that I continue to learn from every day. But dinner table conversations at my house were about sociology and media theory and just kind of, again, like, why do we make the decisions that we do? And as I started working in public relations, I started to think about, and what does that say about us? How do we, like, for me, personal brand alignment is being intentional and deliberate about the decisions that we make because it relates to all the things of how we show up in the world.
I'm thinking about the way that I shop now. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a convenience shopper. Yeah. And I'm like thinking about like, what does that all say about me? But yes, that makes sense. And I'm also trying to think of like young Jana at the dinner table. And it's, you have to send me like a visual, like you have to send me like a picture of you as a youth. Cause I feel like one of the things I say about myself is like, I've been an adult since I was a kid.
My parents
feel like you're probably the same way. I'm like, you definitely have been an adult since you were a kid. Well, there's so many things that I could talk with you about, and we'll let this conversation go where it goes. But kind of our focus today is financial activism. And I felt like it was important to talk to you about it because I remember the first emails that me and you exchanged, and it was about angel investing. And you're like, yeah, come be your angel investing doula. And I was like, yeah, I need that because like, I don't know anything, right? Like this is a whole new world to me. This is a whole new privilege. Like I've never like just been in this space, never even seen myself in this space. And so you are somebody that like in the space of me learning about this, you have been very intentional about where you put your money, I guess like, you know, aligning it with your brand, right? And your values. But I've also kind of wonder, like for, I don't know, like for all the people that you know, because you're very well connected, it's just like so many things around like how does that fit into like the people that you know and the world and the things that you do? And like, how do you, I mean, so many questions around like what kind of brought you to the space of wanting to be so intentional about where you put, like, it's just all these questions. So I guess my first thing is, I guess you've never like said you're a financial activist, but that's who you are in my mind. And I think it's because of how, where you put your money and like what your values are, how you connect that. But when you first came into this like investing world, even myself, it's so easy to get wrapped up in just the thing that you're never going to grow. This is going to grow. This is going to make money. It may not have anything to do with the world in the sense of like helping communities or being supportive of like overlooked founders or whatever it is. But it's very easy to just get into the thing that's going to make money. So I guess like, how do you navigate coming into this investing space and being socially conscious?
Yeah.
When it's all these opportunities that are like money, money, money.
Totally, totally. So I think it's important. I'm going to rewind a little bit because when I first started Style House Public Relations in 2006, we were working with small to medium-sized businesses. And then in 2009, 2010, started working with more like corporate clients, just as, you know, my name got out there, and also starting to get the attention of startups. And it was during that time when I was going through a lot of growth in terms of like meeting new people and my name was getting passed around and, you know, like me and my services were in demand. That was the first time that I started to think about like, could I want skin in the game in these businesses. Like I'm helping to build these businesses. They're paying me on a monthly basis to have access to my brain and my Rolodex, just all the different ways, you know, there's pitching media, which is one part of public relations. But that's just the earned part. There's also paid, there's owned, like there's so many different ways to get your message out there. And part of what was innovative about us in 2006 was that we were looking at that really holistically. And not a lot of other, especially boutique consumer public relations firms in New York City were doing that then. So all of this is important to say was that like, part of my coming into my own as an investor started with realizing that I needed to rejigger and recalibrate like how money and wealth and power flowed in my life. And that was like, okay, I'm helping to build these companies. Like they only kind of matter because I made them matter because I introduced them to these people. Like they're building great businesses, right?
Yeah, of course. But you made that, you're the connector.
Right. And then they'd be like, oh, like, you know, our investors are like, you know, we're having a hard time raising money, or like our investors don't really understand the investment that you know, and that they'd be like, oh, we want to like protect you from our investors. And I'm like, no, I need to talk to the investors. I need the investors to understand what we're doing and why this matters, and that there's going to be short-term return and long-term return, but it's going to look a little different. And that was, you know, I was kind of like, I want to be where the power is and I want to be where the control
don't
is.
Don't hide me. Don't put me in the closet like here. Right. Bring me out.
So it was around this time too that I kind of like forewent some retainer fees in order to take a little bit of a risk by taking on some equity in a company that ultimately didn't go anywhere. But for me, it was about learning the mechanics of deals and, you know, what does that look like? What is the language? Like the only way to learn is really to do it. I mean, you and I are both investors and supporters of Class Rebel, and Brooke Harley does the world such a service by putting that information out there. But definitely in like 2009, 2010.
I know there was nothing. Like, it had to be nothing out there.
You know, this like young little like boss baby in New York City was not learning about that. So that was part of it. So then, and I think everyone's nuances and feelings about money are complicated, and I'm a big fan of The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. She's one of my gurus when it comes to like thinking about abundance and money having energy and what that means. For me, talking to my partner, my husband, about our holistic financial picture and how we were investing not just in the markets, but like how we were investing in ourselves and what that looked like, and like was an important process to me actually being able to like deploy capital into private companies and like call myself an angel investor, even though I had like invested. I was already advising for equity, which is investing my time to get a stake in the company or to have skin in the game. But it was talking about that. And the first cash investment that we made was in Hey Mama, which is the largest network of working mothers in the country, or at least it was in 2019 when we invested. Uh-huh. And this idea of creating tools and solutions, and you know, when women control their lives and their assets and their wellness and all of that, society thrives, right? And I knew that. I had already been doing some work in the like future of work space around, you know, what will the future of the workplace look like and how will it be more inclusive and specifically like kinder to parents. We started off our conversation this morning about how hard it is to be a parent. And it's just like, it's a full-time job. You're always on the job training because they're always growing. And the investment that we made in Hey Mama, I have about 20 companies in my portfolio now. And the idea that I'm investing in something that I not only believe has the ability to grow into something really meaningful, not just in value, but in the world. But also that like I invest to learn about things that I want to learn about. I've always been so passionate about community, even though I didn't really have the words for it. And I'm not like a community leader as much as a solo entrepreneur. I just always needed community and like people around me to talk to and to bounce ideas off of. And so the idea of my first angel investment being in a community for working mothers felt, for lack of a better word, on brand.
Very on brand.
And so, you know, yes, it's thinking about the returns that we're going to get and how are we figuring out our portfolio and, you know, the risk. And I have a brilliant financial advisor that I get to talk about those things with. And that I also get to, I tend to do the qualitative pressure testing on my deals, whereas Justin, my financial advisor, will do some of the quantitative pressure testing on, you know, here's what we have to believe in order for this to make sense. And so in addition to learning about the world and about that specific business or sector by making an investment in something, you're also joining a community of other people who share your values and are putting their money in line. Right. So I met, like, I know, I think on the round of Hey Mama that I came in with, there were probably 20 other women and some that were, there were actually some VCs that came in. And so it just, the more people that you talk about, the more people that you talk to about the things that are important to you and what excites you, those things come to you for better or for worse. Because as we've said, like shiny objects, right? Like, and that's why for a really long time, I didn't even call myself an investor. Because I was like, I don't want people like, A, putting me on a pedestal, like thinking that I'm going to like change the trajectory of their life or their business, because I'm not in that way.
Because it does come with that, where you're like, I am not, yes, I've had a little inkling of that where I'm like, not that I can help in a certain way, but not all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, this is also for the listeners who don't know me well, it's important to know that I ran Style House as a boutique, like a small agency, a consulting firm for 15 years up until last year. And now for the first time in my adult life, I'm like a solopreneur and I don't have a staff to manage. And yeah, I miss having like a team and collaborators in that way. But as I've already said, I have so many other people that I collaborate with. And the majority of my work now is this personal brand alignment work that I do one-on-one. I'm now doing more speaking and workshop facilitation and writing on these topics. And then my angel investing, I basically went from brands hiring me to help build them to me investing my cash into brands to help build them and accumulate wealth for myself as well along the way.
That part and like so many things. Okay. So how did you build from your experiences? Like how did you build your values to align with like the way that you invest? Like what are your values? What do you look for when you're investing versus like, for me, I'm already like a values aligned person. Like we know that in the work that I do. So that was like kind of first for me, but it can test you coming into this space because it's so much about money. Is this thing going to grow? Is it going to be this? Like, yeah, that is an important thing. You want to see something grow, but what are your true values, right? And then how does that allow you to make decisions about where you place your precious money? And your precious time and energy too.
Yeah. Well, I'll start by saying that when we talk about investment, I think I want to like clarify for the audience here too, that we're talking about investment of a variety of our resources. And when I talk about one's personal economy, there is your time, your money, and your relationship. And so there may be someone, a founder or a business concept that I have invested in the sense that I have like introduced them to people that I think that they need to know. Maybe some of those people are investors. Maybe some of them are people that will bring other, you know, big B2B partnership opportunities to them that'll put their business into a whole new catalyst. Or maybe that person is just like an influencer that will be a mouthpiece or amplifier for what they're doing. As far as like what I see as like, what are my values and what am I going to put myself behind? The way that I articulate them evolves and changes with the world and with time. But I think that when it comes to sustainability, the idea of like not bringing more stuff into the world, not making any more crap in the world for no reason. And like I said, with each venture, it's a little different. And also I'm not actively investing right now, as in I'm not writing checks right now. I'm investing all of my extra time and money into democracy at the moment. Saving democracy. So I also look, I always prioritize founders that are women and people of color and non-binary, LGBTQ, for a couple of reasons. One, I know that diversity is a strength and a superpower. And when you have a variety of perspectives around the table, that is powerful. And I would rather invest in diverse founders and add my diversity to that than like be like the one like white woman around the table with like me be the diversity to like some group of dudes. And you know, the idea also of someone knowing how hard it is to run a company, because running a company is hard. And I think that no one's born knowing how to do these things. And so this isn't a discredit to, you know, but like there's certain people who climbed the corporate ladder and have had really, really, really successful careers and then go out on their own. And there's a lot of infrastructure that they've taken for granted when they were at their big firms or whatever the other part of that might be. So that's something that I kind of, I'm like, are they kind of like up for the task and won't burn themselves out? I think that back to your thing about like impact and like it being kind of like all about money, I have the privilege of selecting what part of that I want to pay attention to because I have a financial investment advisor that does our like diversifies our portfolio and all of those things. Uh-huh. So when it comes to like the bigger picture and understanding what our variety of exposures and risks are, I'm not as involved in that. You know that one of the things I focus on is like my highest and best use.
For sure. And which so, is something like, I've definitely like aimed to do in my life. I'm like highest and best use.
Like the curious person in me would like love to understand that. Like I'd love to be able to talk about the value of precious metals and like how we're like diversifying our dividend. But like, I don't need to expert. I'm really lucky to be able to phone a friend. When it comes to these investments that I'm making, angel investments, which mean just personal money versus spending someone else's money, like a venture capital firm invests other people's money because they have a fund, whereas mm-hmm. I'm investing my own money and I don't invest large amounts of money. They are not a large percentage of my net worth for what it's worth, because we any investment that you make needs to be what you're willing to lose. I mean, Arlen Hamilton says that all the time. It's not like, as in like, I'm not going to make a dent necessarily in that company's financial capitalization. Yeah. I also, you know, am balancing, we're going to hear a lot about balance today. I'm balancing the risk and the reward. And that's where there's so many things. Like I said, I invest to learn about new things. I invest to see what I'm capable of, right? In like mm-hmm. helping to grow something. I invest to be able to bring interesting things to my network. And for all sure. of these things are ultimately investments in myself, right? Like I invest in things that I want to talk about and think about all the time.
Okay. So I have a question for you. Speaking of kind of thinking about this whole like idea of when you kind of transition from I'm going to help you build your company to I want to like be at the table. I want to have more power, more understanding of the insides of what's going on. I'm going to invest my money, my time, my relationships, all that. One of the things, like I said, when I became cool with you was like, I never saw myself in the space of being an angel investor, because it comes with its own requirements. You have to make a certain amount of money. You have to check this list, you know, check something off of this list, even become an angel investor. So it wasn't in my circle. I don't have friends that are angel investors. Like they look at me and they're like, what are you even talking about? Like, I don't know what you're talking about, right? And so I understand that like the angel investing, just to be qualified in that space, it means that there is some type of privilege that the person, you know, has, right? Like financial wealth, whatever.
You either have to have a certain amount of net worth or you have to show a certain amount of annual income, or you have to have taken qualifying tests.
Exactly. So I guess like in that sense, when we're talking about this power thing, right? Like, I guess like, what does that speak to for you that like most people can't angel invest? What do those kind of like gatekeeping and in many ways, I guess like, what are your thoughts about that? How does that make you feel? You know, especially in regards to like your identities and the ways that you may be privileged.
It definitely feels like an honor and a privilege to be able to not just invest money and to make those decisions, but to choose what I invest in and to put my money towards things that I am really proud to be able to say, like, I am doing something to help make this grow and to make this bigger. I mean, where to begin with our financial systems and the government?
Get into it.
I know, like, literally where to begin. But I think that the idea that one should have to have reached a certain threshold of financial security in order to take a certain threshold of financial risk, that at face value makes sense to me. Like, I think that itself is smart.
For a person to make a decision, like, when I get here, then I can invest because I have this level of stability, right? And I can exercise that.
I guess, like, I wish our credit card companies were held to the same standards, I guess is what I'm saying, uh-huh. right? Like, you can't uh-huh. spend money that you don't have. So there's that, in that, like, ideally the systems should be set up to help people make smart decisions, but they shouldn't be set up to prohibit people from exercising their power and freedom.
Yeah.
Hashtag balance. That's just like my general thinking. Cause you know, there's just this idea that, I mean, just young people and they're given these credit cards. I mean, I had credit card debt when I first was professional in the city because I didn't know how it worked. Anyway, so there's like the whole kind of like predatory side of the financial industry. We don't need to necessarily get into that today. But when it comes to the ability to legally even invest $500 into a private company, there's got to be ways to give people more access to that. And many people are working on this, by the way, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And all of those. But there is a certain amount of, there's something else I want to say, which is that there's a lot of people who are sitting on a ton of privilege and money and don't even like realize what they could be doing with it. And that I think is also like an important part of how I see my financial activism. You know, I don't, like the Robin Hood example is not right. Like I'm not gonna like steal from the rich and give to the poor, but like this idea, everything I do is rooted in the concept of like getting more women and people of color into positions of leadership and power, making sure they thrive there. And when I think about my writing and this personal brand alignment work and the strategy that I'm doing around like my activism for abortion access, everything is connected and everyone underestimates their power and influence. And so in this latter category, that's where I think that my unique spoke in the financial activism wheel is to help people, I'll just specifically say like women who are in my same socioeconomic class, understand how much power they have, how much power they can wield, and giving them actionable ways to do that. You asked before about my values and like, what are my values? Like when I say values aligned, like what does that mean? Because it can feel self-referential, right?
Yeah.
And I think going back to like that everything is connected and everyone underestimates their power, collective liberation. All of our destinies are inextricably linked. And the sooner we figure that out, the sooner we will prolong survival of humanity.
Literally.
That's the lens that I generally put things through. Do I always like live up to that promise? No. But that's where we come into balance, right? Like where does my impact come at the behest of my earnings? And where does my impact come thanks to my earnings? Or where did my earning come thanks to my impact? It's a constant dynamic interplay. And I think that's really the crux of financial activism, right? Because it's like, we live in a capitalist society where money equals power and where the systems are designed to create more for those at the top and push those at the bottom
towards further down.
Yeah.
And I think like that's like a thing that has what I've learned in the last couple of years when it's come to being an angel investor is exactly that part around like I have more power than I've been aware of, right? And like I think like, you know, there's some days where I'm like, I have no power, right? Because I do have these identities that people don't appreciate. And like I do have these experiences that also kind of, you know, cause all types of traumatic feelings around like, what is my actual power in this world? But there's also like this thing that I'm learning through working with people like yourself and people that are maneuvering in this financial space, capital, because we live in capitalism, which may be unfortunate, right? But like it influences the future, right? So where I put my money now influences the future. So if I'm able to support an idea that is going to be really helpful, that is filling a need, if I'm able to support founders of, you know, diverse founders so that there can be more spaces, you know, more identities in these like quote unquote places of power, then like I am doing something. You know, I think sometimes like, you know, you may not be an angel investor, but it's still like, where do you spend your money? You know, your dollar is, you know, it's either powering somebody or in disempowering the other, right? Like the difference between, and trust me, I tell people, I have an Amazon habit that I'm trying to quit. But like I said, I'm a convenience shopper and that's like my issue, right? You know, I also try to make these conscious decisions of like, I could go to Amazon or I can go to someone local or I can go to somewhere where, you know, like all those things are influential in how we move forward. And they're all like a form of financial activism, no matter where you are currently in like your socioeconomic status.
Precisely. Also flip that on its head, because not charging enough is another side of this,
that part. Hello, somebody, that part, right? And like, I've, you know, like, I'm a connoisseur of Black luxury. We talk about that. We're building a brand around that. And a part of that has been like charging appropriately for what my time and energy and knowledge and all of that, right, is worth, not to me, not to everyone else too. Because I think, like, you know, especially when you talk about like lived experience or something not being like, here's a degree, right? It can get really weird, whatever. But that's like another thing. Even like we're working with birth workers, like doulas especially, I'm like, you're not charging enough, right? Like you're not. And that's a part of, I feel like a part of liberation is to be able to pay your bills totally. And to be able to take care of yourself.
And like, when you charge enough, you are making sure that that work is valued everywhere.
For sure. And understanding that there's a place, right? Like when I found myself really undercharging very often, I was like, I'm going to create a nonprofit where people that don't have the income don't have to feel ashamed of not having it, right? Like it's not on you because you didn't have it, but how can I create a system that supports this, right? And creates opportunities for others so they can get paid in the process and not putting myself in the space of deficit, because that's not going to work either. Like that sustainability piece that you're talking about is so important. Yeah. So I had a question, because I want to get into this with you because it's something that's important to you and me, but you said like, right now I'm not writing checks to like, you know, investors or whatever the case is, or investments, but I am investing time, energy, money, whatever, into maintaining democracy. How does that look for you right now? And like, what is that including?
I've always felt that it's really important to talk about the things that are important to you, because you never know if they're important to other people. And it's just like not polite to talk about politics or whatever. So I've always, I guess, just had the confidence and ability and privilege to be able to be like, hey, I've been spending a lot of time thinking about how like our kids are going to have less rights than we will. Like, I'll just like kind of say that at the playground.
Simple thought, just a Wednesday afternoon thought.
I see it. Like, you know, people will text me things about like, I'm like their activist friend or whatever. So there's just kind of like acknowledging the reality that everything is political, and that when we don't talk about politics, we are just accepting the status quo, which is of oppression. I think that as far as reproductive rights and abortion access goes right now, what I have been focusing on is uniquely engaging individuals who are influential in business, money, power circles to understand what's at stake for the economy when this happens, mm-hmm. because that is more comfortable and easy.
Makes more sense for them.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, they can talk about their daughters or their wives, and they probably will, but at the end of the day, at the beginning of the day, to get them to pay attention first and foremost, they need to understand that they have something at stake.
Specific to like the conversation of like in general, or like abortion specific, or like
everything, because everything is connected, mm-hmm. but specifically to abortion access and bodily autonomy. 51% of our population, more than that, losing bodily autonomy. That's the same percentage of the population that makes 85 to 90% of household purchasing decisions. So this is an economic and humanitarian crisis. Mm-hmm. Also, because, and this is where my role as an angel investor and in these circles, in these Zooms where people are talking about the different things that they've invested in or the different things that they're looking at, I know that a lot of people in my network were looking at investing in women's healthcare companies, whether that was contraception and apps to help you take your pill or whatever, fertility clinics. And the Roe v. Wade is probably the most well-known Supreme Court case, but there are so many other cases that even just in the past 4 months, now people are talking about more, that become at risk when right to privacy goes away. And the idea also of those eggs, those embryos on ice that you and your partner are saving for when you're ready to have your kids. Because mm-hmm. the capitalist system is running you rampant and you haven't had time yet to have kids. So, and you know who's making that money are the investors in those those fertility clinics. And so that's where mm-hmm. I was saying to them, you know, heads up, there's a sitting senator from Tennessee who thinks that those eggs on ice are equated to murder. And she is Marsha Blackburn. And she is coming for your private ventures-backed startup.
Yes.
And given that I have experience in cannabis and I've worked with other healthcare companies, I know that lobbying and advocacy is a huge part of how certain companies and certain sectors have to spend their capital. No one's lobbying for these fertility clinics, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. to create legislative environments where they and their clients' lives can flourish. No one's lobbying for, Hey Jane, the abortion bill provider. And so the idea that it would actually be more impactful to society for those predominantly cis hetero white men who control the funds behind these companies, it would be much more impactful to society and culture for them to use their voice and to say that, you know, banning any form of healthcare is bad for the economy than giving $1 million for an advocacy campaign, because Planned Parenthood has enough money. Like, it's not a money issue.
But for real though, yes, for real, they have quite a few. And yeah.
And I've also been giving my money to local abortion access funds. So Roe Fund, which is the only fund in Oklahoma, which as of now has the most restrictive abortion ban.
Oklahoma is what? Like, you literally can't have an abortion there. Like, they've just banned it. And okay. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah. So I also am a mentor in a reproductive health and reproductive justice global cohort. And I'm working with some of the women in the EU and Europe who help women access abortions and are also doing advocacy work. There's a pretty prominent activist who is facing 3 years in prison in Poland for providing abortion pills to a woman who was in an abusive relationship and needed to terminate the baby and get out. And the woman didn't even take the pills, but this woman, Justina, is facing 3 years in prison. So I'm connecting people, I'm connecting ideas, I'm working with specific people of influence to determine what their method and message will be to talk about this. Mm-hmm. I'm positioning myself as an unaffiliated strategist who's balancing the pragmatic and the ambitious when it comes to abortion access. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of organizations doing really important work. Don't need to reinvent the wheel in any sort of avenue of what's been happening, but we need more galvanization and we need more activation and engagement, especially from these cis hetero white men who have been historically quite silent on this issue.
For sure. One of the things that kind of popped up when we were talking about like financial activism is like there's so many ways that people could be financially supporting like abortion access. And I think not everyone is meant or built to do like the public facing, you know, whatever, because it could be a lot. One, because people really will threaten you. People will stalk you. People will do all types of like things, right? But I think about abortion and I think about like the financial need, like in these bigger ways, right? Like white cis men, hetero men needing to understand one, the economic effect that'll have and like them putting money where it needs to be and like making sure they're putting money, but it's not like money really needs to be put into like this like legal space, like to do the lobbying, to do the protection for the fertility families that should be protected, their eggs and sperm or whatever the hell they got going on over there. And even like another part of this whole, you know, post-Roe situation that we're all just like waiting to hear about at this point, it's kind of like the criminalization of people who may be utilizing abortion services or services that are connected to abortion. Sometimes it's not actually for an abortion.
The criminalization of women's bodies, of women's health. Yeah. I sent you a podcast episode where there's a male actor that tells his story about this very beautifully. But a missed miscarriage is when like you have a miscarriage, but the body doesn't realize that it's miscarried. And so it doesn't expel. And so, yeah, I think to a lot of people, it's kind of inconceivable to them that their miscarriage and subsequent D&C procedure were an abortion, but it is.
It is. It's exactly an abortion.
And this idea too, that one would go into a healthcare setting, miscarrying and needing life-saving treatment and being accused of aborting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And also like, I went to this conference last month in Colorado. This is right before the leak draft, like literally the day of this happened in the morning. So we're talking about like Roe, what the world looked like if Roe, blah, blah, whatever. So anyway, the speaker was talking about how the criminalization of female body people and that being connected to digital footprints, right? Like you research something, you talk to somebody, the police or whoever look in your phone, see these things and criminalize you. Even if you haven't taken an abortion pill, even if you haven't done or whatever, just like the simple, like you look this up and we think this, we're now potentially going to put you in jail for this long or take your kids or whatever other foolishness that comes with that. And I'm just like, you know, I just think about that in the ways of like the financial pull of that. Like, who do you have representing you? Who do you have? What support do you have for your kids that are on the outside while you're locked up? Like, it's so, it's just to me, it's like, it's so many many, when I'm thinking about financial activism, it's really so many things that people can be doing that they're just not aware of their own power, like you said, and their own ability to assist. Like, you know, thinking like it has to be this big, massive thing. And it's like, no, somebody needs to feed their kids because they're in this complicated situation and they don't have housing. Like,
right. I mean, there's so many ways where like philanthropy and kind of, what is it called? The charity industrial complex causes some more pain than it necessarily helps sometimes. But this is where you go back to like, everyone has a different way that their impact will manifest and where they will feel like certain people, the personal economy, like how you decide, everyone has a different way that they choose how to spend their money. And then if we zoom in on that, then to your activism, your philanthropy, let's just, for the sake of this conversation, let's just call it your 501c3 giving. So you're like, charitable deduction, which is different from 501c4, which is like political action. And then there's like candidates and all the other things in between. And most big companies like NARAL and Planned Parenthood, they have under their umbrella, they have like a C3 and a C4 and all like all the different ways you can give. By the way, there's also a lot of women in my cohort who are restricted from giving to some of these things because of their husband's employment, which drives them crazy. So like if your husband works for a hedge fund and manages pensions and anything like that, you can't give to political candidates.
This is so, I just think about how all these things are just like so connected to power and like how these things are created in a certain way to disempower certain communities and advance others. And it's like, even in that situation where like you can't give, it puts you in a situation where you're inactive. Right. Like,
and I would say that my close friends who I talk about this with, we have found workarounds, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But also, wait, going back to 501c3 and like everyone's personal economy and how you choose to spend your money and what's important to you, there's certain people who love to be able to know, like, that $50 that I gave to the Women's Prison Association helped her have a meal when she got home with her family. There's other people that are like, I don't really understand any of these problems. I trust you to take my money and do what you think is best for me. And then there's other people that are like, you know, I want to find like the most like leverageable force impact, force multipliers for change and invest there. And there's probably six other types that I am not even talking about now. And 60, 600, 6,000, right? Everyone thinks differently and thinks differently. That's like how we started this conversation. But this is where, again, I come back to like the movement and reproductive rights, even reproductive freedom and reproductive justice, right, are different things. And oftentimes the movement, for lack of a better word, gets its panties in a bunch over some of these things where I'm like, we need everything. Like, it's like no one is anyone else's competitor. Like, you know, like we need both and we need it all. And that's, you know, this also goes back to like, you know, we can assume that someone has a certain way that they like to give, but that also assumes that they've even stopped to take the time to think about that, which not
all many have. I think it's like important, like the piece around, like, I try to tell people, like, in the work that I do, yes, reproductive justice, or we're under the same lens or purpose, but how we get there may look different because there's different, like, components, right, that we're all dealing with externally, internally, in our lives, our experiences are different. So we might, like you said, this person may give this way, this person might support that way, but it's all needed. And it definitely puts my panties in a bunch when people are fighting around, like, what's the right way to, I'm like, the way that you're helping because it's needed. Like there's a request. If that's what you can do, do that. Like, and if you can do this, do that. And let's see like where that impact comes collectively. So one of like kind of like last questions I have for you, what would you like the future of financial activism? And I guess like we can be really specific when it comes to like abortion access, since like that's kind of where we're at right now. What would you like financial activism to look like? What would you like it to include for people wanting to like participate in that? Ideally, it would look like this, or we need this and this gap would be filled, like those kind of thoughts.
Okay, well, this feels like a really great time to call out one of my favorite economic theorist, Kate Raworth, who wrote a book called Donut Economics, and it's 7 ways to think like a 21st century economist. I feel like I've told you about this, right?
You haven't. That's why I'm like, no, you have not.
I buried the lead, Xavier. So what Kate Raworth does, she has a TED talk that says, it's like, it predates the book. I think it's called Economy Should Be Designed to Thrive, Not Grow. But the donut she places the economy and the economic models that we've been using for centuries. Some of them she just debunks as wrong. But the ones that like have some merit to them, she puts within society and within the planetary boundaries, within the Earth's boundary. And so it's so much more realistic. And she talks a lot about, I'm a systems thinker, right? And like everything is connected. So, you know, she talks about like kind of unintended consequences and like all these types of things that just like don't get counted for, but are need to be counted for. So the reason why it's called donut is because what it ultimately ends up looking like is a donut, because the safe space is the donut. The middle of the donut is where we have undershot our social foundation. So political voice, food, health, shelter, those types of things. And then our planetary boundaries are on the outside, biodiversity loss, ozone layer, you know, all those types of things. And so the safe space in the middle. And the idea is to build regenerative systems that feed each other. We can build regenerative systems. Like, yeah, we have evolved enough and we have enough data and research that we can build things better. And so I don't know what the answer is besides getting smart, interesting, diverse people together in rooms to solve these problems, because we're not going to do it alone. But the idea of people underestimating their power, when you see yourself as part of the system, that's when the aperture widens and when the consciousness raises. There's so much, there's so many jewels in the donut economy that I'll break it up.
Can you explain that part a little bit more? Like when you see yourself in a system, can you just speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah. I think, you know, we tend to confuse our point of view with the absolute truth.
We're all guilty.
We don't see things as they are. We see them as we are. You know. So I believe that when we zoom out and we see what we are products of, or we see what we are contributing to, when we can place ourselves, I mean, you know, the astronauts had, like when they're on the moon, right? They have, it's called the visual effect when they see the whole world. And so I guess, you know, that's where my brain's going to, like, when we zoom out and we can understand the way the systems work, because systems are generally designed to repeat. The easiest way to think about it is a fountain, right? It's like the water comes up and there's a pump and it keeps going. Then you start to see where, you know, doing things differently creates different outcomes. And that is where I believe we can understand our own personal power as well as like collective power.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Like just in the sense of like, we are in a system, right? Like, and it's designed in a way, there's certain, and there's, you are a part of it, you know, whether you want to be or not, you know, but there, what you do or don't do contributes to something, right? Like whatever it is, big, small, whatever, something that you do or don't do contributes to the system, like you said, like continuing to flow, right? But like, if you have that awareness of like, I am a part of the system, what I do matter day to day, how I handle, how, where I shop, where I don't shop, where, how I purchase this, where I put my money, how I, you know, where I eat, like all these things contribute to something.
Right. And you don't get to choose whether you're a contributor or not. It's one thing, you know, like I did these briefings for my financial community on reproductive rights. And I can see from podcast interviews to TV shows to other things where like the things that I put into motion are like stuff happening. Uh-huh. You don't have to be me or doing those things to be having an impact. Like everyone has an impact. Like even if I wasn't paying attention to, like you're having an impact whether you realize it or not.
Right. But it's just, and it sucks sometimes, but like, because you exist, you contribute. You're existing, you're contributing. But now it's about pulling into, whether it's like you said, your time, energy, money, relationships, whatever, like whatever it is, how do you want that to contribute to what we're existing in collectively? Being on brand about the things that you do and being intentional and understanding that it matters no matter where you are on the scale of like socioeconomic status or whatever other scales people have in their life. But like, it's all literally contributing, and we're contributing to each other's lives, even from like afar.
I was trying to find, I want to appropriately quote the person who, this idea of like, does this heal the world or steal from the world? Again, balance, right? Because what we don't want as women, female identifying, non-binary people is to think that like, because we're doing things for ourselves, that we're somehow stealing it from other. Because as a mother, I can tell you that many people in my life still believe that like it's zero sum when it comes to my time, that my time is something that's given to me, not that I have. And so, you know, everything is imperfect. There's no, you know, I think I said this, everything is somewhat problematic, but just if we're being reductive enough, but to say like, does this heal or does this steal? Like that's where like putting negative energy out in the world doesn't really do anything. But if you need to fucking scream because you need a primal scream because the world is driving you crazy and you need to have that release in order to be able to heal other, heal the world in other ways, then that's what you need. Even if it like hurts someone else's ear.
Yes. Listen, I'm here for that. I'm going to take that message with me today for sure. Like, am I healing or stealing? And like, if I am stealing, is it healing something else that is like, you know, a bigger mission, more important, whatever it is? Yeah. Well, you know, obviously want to respect your time. So how do people reach you if they want to learn more about you and the work that you do?
I'm at Jana M. Turner on most channels. I'm planning to write some Medium essays in the next year or so. I already have one up about what is an SPV because so many people were asking me that. But I'm most active on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram at Jana M. Turner. LinkedIn is Jana Meyerowitz Turner. Yeah, I always like have various office hours set up. So I like meeting people and hearing interesting things and helping people tap into their power and purpose.
Yes. And I will definitely say, if you are interested in talking to Jana, even for like 5 minutes, I can guarantee you're going to walk away being like, I'm that bitch. Like, wow. Like, I really could, like, I'm out here. Like, that's how I feel. Like, every time I'm like, yeah, why didn't I can do that. Like, why was I not thinking about that in reference to myself? Like, why, you know, so now, like, when I have these moments of trying to think bigger or whatever, I'm like, what would Jana do? What would Jana say? What would be like, what is a, and I even think like, what is a, in my brain, would it make me feel like outlandish, right? Like, what is this outlandish idea? Because Jana would say it's not. So I just go to Jana, like, I think I'm just going to take over the world. You're like, okay, well, how do you want to do it? This way? Do you want to, I have my network over here. This person also took over the world once. Do you want to talk to them? Do you want me to send you an email? Connect you guys? Like, how do you want to do this?
That's a really good me impression. I feel seen.
Well, thank you for your time today. And of course, send me that book recommendation too.
Yes, The Donut Economy. I will text that to you now.
But thank you.
Okay, take care. Stay safe and healthy. Bye.